From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I joined Sheridan just over 10 years ago, and with that being within the family, really was able to go to various industry conferences, get to know a lot of industry people. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate to be part of a mentoring group, mentoring and inspiring women, a group of women who created a mentoring group, a group of women in radio who had been recognized by a trade magazine. And really, as a result of that mentoring group, got an opportunity to learn various people, meet various people in the industry through that group, as well as my brother, who had been involved with the industry for many years before I joined, introduced me to various colleagues of his. And my brother had served on the NAB board and had rotated off, and I was approached about joining the board, and I think in part because of the financial background that I had, as well as obviously being within the industry, and I joined.
Susan Davenport Austin, chairwoman of the board of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Also, she is the director, senior vice president, and CFO at the Sheridan Broadcasting Corporation, and president of the Sheridan Gospel Network. Broadcast Music Incorporated collects license fees on behalf of the more than 550,000 songwriters, composers, and music publishers it represents, and distributes those fees as royalty to members whose works have been publicly performed. As a performing rights organization, or PRO, BMI issues licenses to various users of music, including television and radio stations and networks, new media, including internet services and websites, and mobile technology businesses such as ringback providers, satellite audio services, nightclubs, hotels, bars, restaurants, and live concert venues. Davenport Austin is the first and the first African American to lead the BMI board. I'm John L. Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Broadcast Music Incorporated with Chairwoman Susan Davenport Austin, In Black America.
When you look at the history of BMI, when it sort of started out, it really was the place for songwriters who were not being compensated to finally get recognized for their work. In particular, when you think about black music, jazz music, etc., those were writers who were being played on the air but were not being recognized and therefore compensated for their work. And that's really part of the history of BMI. And so I was really proud to be part of, to become just a member of that organization as a board member. And so to ultimately get the opportunity to lead it is, as I said, been a tremendous honor.
Susan Davenport Austin was born into the radio business 40 years ago, when her family purchased four radio stations in Pittsburgh, Boston, and Buffalo, New York. Shortly thereafter, they entered into the radio network business with the purchase of the Mutual Black Network, which eventually became the Sheridan Broadcasting Network, which is currently the major partner of the American Urban Radio Network. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Davenport Austin earned an A.B. in mathematics from Harvard University in 1989, and an MBA from Stanford University Graduate School of Business in 1993. Before joining the family business in 2002, she spent 10 years in investment banking, specializing in telecommunications and media finance. Radio Inc. magazine named her one of the most influential African Americans in radio and one of the most influential women in radio. Currently, she is a director, senior vice president, and CFO of the Sheridan Broadcasting Corporation, and president of the Sheridan Gospel Network. Davenport Austin joined the Broadcast Music Board in 2007 and was recently appointed its chairwoman.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. We had parents who were very focused on education, very focused on our development, and providing us with the best opportunities that we could avail ourselves of. And we tried to take advantage of that in terms of our schooling and our future life. We also grew up, my parents bought into the radio business when I was a little tyke back in 72. Mm-hmm. So we grew up, I grew up around radio and grew up around the radio stations and, ultimately the radio network. So it was an interesting way to see the business. I wouldn't say that I grew up in it, but I grew up around it and going down to the radio station and going to concerts and going and getting records back when records were still around. the radio station admittedly served as my record store. I wanted any music, I would go down to the radio station and see if I could find a record.
When did you realize you had an aptitude for math?
I can't answer that question. It was just something, as far as I was concerned, that I always had, and I enjoyed it. And it was always one of my stronger subjects, so I guess it's a quasi-logical mind.
And why did you accept enrollment in Harvard? Obviously, at that point, you probably had a lot of choices, and you selected Harvard for your undergraduate work.
Well, again, my parents were very focused on education and going to, you know, the best schools that we could get into. So Ivy League schools were clearly at the top of that list. Harvard was a place that I visited along with others, and I will tell you very proudly, my brother was a Yale man. My sister went to Princeton. They were both older, so they set a very strong example in terms of what I should be doing with my college career. But I also wanted to step out a little bit on my own, and my sister and I went to the same high school, and so I had been following my sister in school for, it was really since kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to go someplace where I could set my own way. And, you know, I went to visit Harvard, and I thought it was, to be honest, it was a place where when I was visiting, I was nervous about getting in.
Okay.
And I figured if I was nervous about getting in, I must care about it, and that must be where I want to go, and that's really how I made my decision.
Okay, you go to undergraduate on the East Coast, and then you do your graduate work on the West Coast. You just
I heard the call of go West, young woman. Well, when I was still in college, my senior year was looking at graduate school, and specifically looking at business school, and had the opportunity to interview with one of the West Coast graduate schools. And the West Coast was something, growing up in Pittsburgh, that was just so far away, that was not even a consideration for college.
Mm-hmm.
But now with graduate school, it opened my eyes, this interview opened my eyes, and I said, wow, this would be really interesting. And but I didn't want to go right after college. I didn't want to go immediately. I wanted to work for a couple of years. So then when I actually started looking at business schools, I looked at the West Coast because I wanted to try something different, similar to what I said when I went to Harvard. I wanted to try a new experience. My family was all on the East Coast, and I said, I don't know if I will like the West Coast. I don't know if I'm really ready to be that far away from family, but it's 2 years. And with a summer break. So if I don't like it, it's only but so long. And if I do like it, wonderful. And I don't know that I would necessarily take the chance otherwise. So it seemed like a great opportunity. And I accepted Stanford sight unseen. I was grateful to get in. And when I first went out there to visit, I just knew I had found the right place. It was absolutely a phenomenal time.
I understand. Did you do any internships and investment bankings before you accepted your first full-time position?
I did not. I worked at AT&T my summer, mm-hmm, between junior and senior year in college, as I recollect, and I had done some other medical type research and other things in high school and college with Pitt Med School in Pittsburgh.
Tell us about that experience in investment banking, and you specialize in telecommunication and media finance. Did that have something to do with your family involvement in broadcasting?
Absolutely. It was a combination of things. First of all, when I came out of college, I went to work at Citicorp, what was then called Citicorp, now Citigroup, and I went to work in their commercial paper business. Citi was just getting into the investment banking business. Glass-Steagall deregulation, mm-hmm, had just come about. And this was my first taste of investment banking and really enjoyed it. But then I did that for 2 years, and I went back to business school because I knew I needed some basic financial training. While I had majored in math in college, I hadn't majored in finance, and mm-hmm, I felt I didn't have an accounting background. So I felt there were some things that I needed, which is why I went back to business school. coming out of business school, I was trying to, really actually coming out of the first year and looking for my summer job, I was really trying to find out what I wanted to do with my life and my career. And I was reminded of a classmate of mine in college who was a cartoonist for the college newspaper. And as he was looking for jobs, he said, "Well, Susan, when you think about it, to do this job, I have to draw, which I'm going to do anyway. I have to be up on current events, which I'm going to do anyway. This combines both of that, and someone's going to pay me to do it. This seems like a great job." So when I started thinking about where I wanted to do in banking, I said, well, what are the things that I read? And I always read about technology and innovations and telecom and radio, because I grew up in radio, because I had worked at AT&T for a summer in college. So these were all things that I was looking at. I obviously had the banking interest. And I said, well, if I can get someone to pay me to spend, to keep up to date on what's happening in the telecommunications and media industry, and I can also work on financial things that I like and use my numbers background, wouldn't that be great? And that's really how I ended up doing telecom and media banking.
I understand. If you're just joining us, you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr., and we're speaking with Susan Davenport Austin. She is the Director, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Officer at Sheridan Broadcasting Corporation, and she's also President of the Sheridan Gospel Network and Chairwoman of the Board of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Your first involvement with the industry trades was with the NAB, and that led you to BMI?
That's correct. I joined Sheridan just over 10 years ago, and with that being within the family, really was able to go to various industry conferences, get to know a lot of industry people. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate to be part of a mentoring group, Mentoring and Inspiring Women, a group of women who created mentoring group, a group of women in radio who had been recognized by a trade magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And really as a result of that mentoring group, got an opportunity to learn various people, meet various people in the industry through that group, as well as my brother, who had been involved with the industry for many years before I joined, introduced me to various colleagues of his. And my brother had served on the NAB board and had rotated off, and I was approached about joining the board, and I think in part because of the financial background that I had, as well as obviously being within the industry, and I joined. And that's how I really got to know more people in the industry, and I would say more importantly in terms of what became ultimately my path to BMI, how people got to know me just through some of the work that I did on the various committees that I served on within the NAB board, National Association of Broadcasters board.
Now, you're the first African-American and first woman to chair BMI. What was your immediate reaction when you learned that you were appointed a chairwoman?
I was humbled. I was very humbled, to be honest. I was stunned. It's a tremendous honor, a tremendous faith that was being shown in me by my fellow directors in their belief in my ability to lead this wonderful organization. And, you know, I just truly appreciative of the opportunity, and as I said, just really humbled that that I would be given this chance.
Do you think you bring a different perspective to the organization?
I hope so. and I don't mean that in a negative way, but I think that everyone should bring, I think everyone brings a different perspective, and mm-hmm. I think clearly having been a banker for many years brings a perspective, since I wasn't always an industry person. So I bring that perspective. Obviously, as someone who is female, as someone who is African-American, I bring those perspectives to the overall organization and how we work. Now, mind you, I am not the first female, nor am I the first African-American member of the board. So
mm-hmm. Right.
That's one of the beautiful things about BMI, is just its overall diverse history, as I view it from inception, which is part of the reason I found it attractive. But historically, when you look at the history of BMI, when it sort of started out, it really was the place for songwriters who were not being compensated mm-hmm. to finally get recognized for their work. In particular, when you think about black music, jazz music, et cetera, those were writers who were being played on the air but were not being recognized and therefore compensated for their work. And that's really part of the history of BMI, and so I was really proud to be part of, to become just a member of that organization as a board member, and so to ultimately get the opportunity to lead it is, as I said, been a tremendous honor.
How would you explain to us your role as chairwoman for BMI?
I would say it this way. The chair of the board really is the basic job is obviously running the board members, running the board meetings, excuse me, and really trying to work with the board and with management towards achieving the goals and the visions of the organization. So management is really responsible for the day-to-day operations, and we have an excellent team led by our CEO, Del Bryant. And the board really tries to assist management with their vision, their goals, and the execution of the same.
There's been a lot of conversation regarding the new technology, people are able to download this and upload that. How is this new digital age affecting music licensing and some of the challenges that BMI is facing and addressing at the current time?
Well, the new digital age is a great opportunity for songwriters in terms of having more ways in which their music can be heard, more ways in which their music can be used. Mm-hmm. And what that also means is that there's a greater opportunity as we delve into technology to make certain that the creators of those works and we as BMI in protecting their rights are able to recognize how that work is being used, when it's being used, and make certain that their copyright is being protected and that they are getting compensated for the use of their work. It certainly makes things more complicated, but I think we have been really at the forefront in terms of this transformation of the music business and trying to make certain that we are managing that platform in a way that allows people to register their works and allows those works to subsequently be compensated more easily. I think BMI really, we've actually been ranked the last couple of years in terms of one of the top technology companies, just generally speaking. What we have been able to do with respect to the growth in digital mm-hmm. music licensing and the recognizing of works, I think, has really set us apart from others and really made us a stronger organization.
Now, when people think of Broadcast Music Incorporated, they automatically think radio and television station, but it's more than that. It's nightclubs, hotels, bars, restaurants.
Any place that you hear music, whether it's the elevator, it's at a nightclub, as you said, it's while you're doing your Christmas shopping and you hear music, any place that you hear music, a license is required. And what we do is we license all of those venues. So not only do we license radio and television, but we license the nightclubs, we license the restaurants, we license all of these places to say this is how you have the right to, because what they're doing is providing an environment that helps their business. And that is great for their business, and the creators of the works that they're utilizing to create that positive environment should be compensated accordingly, which is why businesses get licenses, and through those licenses we ultimately pay the creators of the work. I will tell you that, you know, radio and television is making up less and less. It was Broadcast Music Inc., but we were founded back in 1939, so at that point in time it really was radio. But at this point, the amount that radio and television is amounting to as part of our overall revenue stream is becoming less and less because of the internet, because of general licensing like these venues. It's really a much smaller portion than it used to be.
You mentioned how broad BMI actually encompasses, you know, everything that's musical, that's heard in different venues. How would you go about convincing an independent musician or songwriter who isn't or hasn't yet considered signing up with BMI?
Well, the first thing I would do is say, do you believe that you should be paid for your work?
Okay.
If they don't, you know,
in the conversation.
That's great. And it's really, you don't go forth. But if you do, then I would encourage them to go to BMI.com and register. Not everyone ends up with a hit song. There are clearly thousands upon thousands upon thousands of writers. But nevertheless, as particularly with the internet these days, people find things and will use things. If it's not registered, you won't get recognized for your work.
Okay.
What's nice is that BMI, while we, you know, I talk about the compensation because people tend to think about money,
mm-hmm.
but what we also do is development with our songwriters. We have different classes where we talk about the songwriting process and teach people, you know, have songwriters teaching songwriters and, you know, whether it's How I Wrote That Song or whichever, just different ways to really help people develop their careers. These are professionals. They need the training. They need the development. And all of that is part and parcel of what you get as a member of BMI. And it's a very useful process in terms of helping people think about how they are developing their work. And it's also a great opportunity for them to network with other songwriters, get to know different people, which could further their career down the road. And certainly I've heard that from some of the songwriters I've had the opportunity to meet over the years.
Obviously, you're not laying around the house all day, you know, watching soap operas or doing menial.
At least not today.
At least not today. How do you divide the time between the responsibilities at BMI and obviously your plate is full at Sheraton?
Well, it's like anything else, it's a balancing act.
Okay.
It really comes down to having good people and strong teams around you who are able to take care of the work. As chair at BMI, where, you know, we've got a great management team that really executes,
mm-hmm.
or as in my role at Sheraton, I've got great people who I work with who really are able to execute, and I just try to provide the guidance as needed to make certain we're all pulling our oars in the same direction, if you will. So it's a juggling act, but as long as you have good people, it makes it much easier.
Now, with all the sampling that goes on in some of our modern music today, how does BMI involve themselves in that process? If another artist is using someone else's music for a short period of time doing their compositions?
Well, as part of, I mean, if you're a writer, I think you have respect for the other writers as well. So you recognize you're using someone else's work and you get permission. And you work out some arrangement to be able to utilize that song. So those are, you know, we certainly help writers if they want to use someone else's work, get in touch with the appropriate personnel to make certain that they have the right permissions in place. But it's, I can tell you, for example, I had someone who wasn't a songwriter, but a fiction writer
mm-hmm.
who wanted to use some of the lyrics of the song in one of his books, who, you know, was a friend of mine, and said, okay, I know I need to do this. What do I need to do? And you know, I just put him in touch with the right people at BMI to help connect him with whoever he needed to do to get that permission. So, again, writers respect each other and their creative works, and so I don't think you have the challenges of people just trying to steal music and not be recognized as a general.
We addressed this yesterday when we spoke, and I just, from my perspective, my parents own the radio station, I thought I would want to become an announcer, but you went in another direction.
Well, you know, growing up, while I was around radio, my father was a businessman. He was not on the mic. He was a lawyer by training and had been dean of the law school before he acquired mm-hmm. these stations. And so I saw the business side. My mother is a dentist and had her own dental practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not grow up necessarily with the sort of intensity of the mic. That being said, when I got to college, having grown up around radio, I did spend at least one time, you know, because opening up the mic, you do it regularly, but opening up the mic to anyone who doesn't know is very intimidating. and trying to be entertaining and informative when you are not actually looking at your audience is really a skill that not everybody has. So when I was in college, I was asked if I would substitute for someone who had a show. And I did do that for about an hour or two. And I got to tell you, when I first opened up that mic, my hands were shaking. I think I probably scratched the record that I was trying to do, but I wanted to have that experience because my family was in radio, what it was like to actually be on the air so that I could have a sense of, you know, what it is these skilled announcers do on a daily basis. But coming out of college, coming, you know, as I said, I was a numbers person, and being on the air was not a skill that I had. So, so it was nice to still be around all this evolving technology, this media, telecom, et cetera. And it was my way of really being involved with the business before actually coming to the company. I think my recommendation for anyone, if they have the opportunity, is you might have the family business, but if you have the opportunity to go work someplace else first, see how other people do things, learn from that experience, gain from that experience, you can bring more back to your own family, your own business. Or I certainly think for me, it helps from, you know, building one's own self-confidence. You know, you get your knocks and your licks in a very different way when you're the boss's daughter.
What do you hope to accomplish during your tenure, and how long is the tenure?
Generally, the chair is elected each year. Usually, it's for 3 years, so I was just reelected for my second year. My hopes are that we will continue to grow and develop our business as we face, as we were talking about earlier, this evolving age of copyright protection, of digital, and making certain that BMI really remains at the forefront of being the industry leader in managing music rights, really. I think we will be the global leader in music rights management. So that's my goal, is to help push us and continue to develop us in that direction. I think what it means to manage those rights is constantly evolving because the industry is evolving. What exists today with respect to the record label industry and how their business works is very different from what existed 30 years ago.
Susan Davenport Austin, Chairwoman of Broadcast Music Incorporated. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, One University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, One University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.